Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey to all my Jiu-Jitsu brothers and sisters out there. Almost time for episode 42 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. But before we get into the interview with the incredible Daniele Bolelli, I just want to remind you guys that my new online Jiu-Jitsu dojo, the Master Academy, is now open. At present, we have almost 100 gigs of HD instructional material. That's my best Jiu-Jitsu that I'm condensing and putting up for members, as well as podcasts that you can't hear anywhere else. They're only available to members of the Master Academy. And as you guys are listeners of the show and you guys have supported me, you get 10% off all of the membership options. All you need to do is head on over to Jiu-Jitsu Master Academy and put in the coupon code PODCAST. That's jiu-jitsu-master-academy.com, and just enter in that coupon code PODCAST and you'll get 10% off. Also, our other sponsor of the show is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. We have a bunch of cool t-shirts and gis, belts, hoodies, stickers, patches, just a whole bunch of cool jiu-jitsu stuff. It's really, really high quality stuff. And there's also some online instructional learning material like books and videos on there. Again, because you guys are supporters of the show, you get 10% off anything in the store. Just head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com, put in that coupon code PODCAST again, and you'll get that discount. And finally, if you're in the UK and you want to try using CBD, to relieve the inflammation from hard jiu-jitsu training, head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and put in the code JJBTRUTH, and you'll get a discount on your order of any of their amazing CBD products. Okay, guys, let's dive right in. Daniele Bolelli, the Ronin of the Mind. Hello, good people. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'm so happy to have my friend Daniele Bolelli as a guest today. Daniele is... the best way I can describe him is a truly unique individual. He has a hugely successful podcast called History on Fire, which I'm a big fan of. And also in a way, not such a big fan of. And I'll tell you why in a minute, Daniele. He's also an accomplished martial artist. He knows a bunch of different styles of martial arts. And he's a college professor. And just generally an interesting, cool cat. And it's my great pleasure to have him on the show. Thanks for coming on, Daniele.
Thanks so much, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
So just to tell you straight away why I'm both a fan and not a fan of History on Fire. Yes. I'm a fan because it's a great quality product and it's all production and it's very interesting. And I always learn something. I have stopped listening to it recently because... God damn, it's just too fucking dark, bro. but I know that's history, and I know that's the way it is. But geez, dude, I can't take any more of it. I listened to the one about Mexico, the conquest of Mexico by the Spanish.
Yeah.
And it affected me for days afterwards. For days, I was walking around like, God damn, what is this hell that we're inhabiting?
Intense. And also on that note, I strongly recommend you don't listen to the latest two I've done.
Okay.
Those make the Conquest of Mexico one sound like a Disney movie.
What are the latest two, Daniele?
Because we did compare and contrast about the Sand Creek Massacre of the Cheyenne in Colorado and the Midway Massacre in Vietnam. And What interests me about that story, I mean, it's as dark as it's going to get, right? I mean, that's probably the worst, hopefully, that I'll ever do.
Uh-huh.
But what interests me about it was the fact that in both cases you had soldiers killing a bunch of civilians in horrible ways, but you also had soldiers wearing the same uniform trying to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
What intrigued me was the psychology of what is that make one guy when order just go kill them all, say yes sir, and start shooting everybody, and somebody else say no, that's not who we are, that's not what we do, and actually taking huge chances in trying to stop something horrible. So it's more like a meditation about good and evil and sort of the human psyche.
And what answers did you find?
I think the overwhelming majority of people like the one line that I've been using, because I kind of like I threw it out one day and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it, is that most people are not evil, but most people are weak.
Wow.
So wherever the majority pushes, they, you know, they're a flag in the wind. So if there's enough consensus going one way, they will go along with it. Mm-hmm. If there's a consensus going another, they will go. Whereas it takes monstrously strong individuals to stick by their principles in the face of everybody else telling you, no, this is what we're going
to
do.
Well, I mean, I guess that begs a deeper question, which is if it's just the fact that people are weak and they're going with the current that the tribe is manifesting, where is that current coming from? Is it like a spiritual, a negative spiritual entity, or is it, do you understand where my question's leading?
I think there are many possibilities to that, right? I don't think there's a single answer to that. But there are, certainly when it comes to what we can at least observe around us in, you know, three-dimensional frame,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I would say is that there's usually somebody who screws up along the way. There's somebody who's just a bad human being, who just thinks, you know, is wrong. Or they are a charismatic individual, they're in a position of leadership, and they are maybe some, you know, it could be whatever stress that triggers it, whatever it can be, you know, think about warfare. Maybe you have just seen your friend get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
You're not an evil person, but you've just been through something really traumatic, and suddenly now all your moral restraints are flying out the window,
mm-hmm.
and you're no longer making distinction between good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're hurt, because you're mad, and you don't have the self-control to keep it in perspective. And you happen to be in a leadership position, and people are looking after you, and suddenly you are passing that along to everybody else.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. That definitely makes sense to me. The question at the root of it all, I think, for me, that is with guys like you, and to the same extent, someone like Dan Carlin, whose show is very hardcore histories, is very similar to yours. And in fact, if I'm honest, Daniele, I got to tell you, it's the biggest compliment I can pay you is that I think you guys are on a par.
that is a big compliment.
And to be fair, I don't listen to his stuff anymore either because I can't take it.
I'll give you the tips then for which episodes are okay.
Okay, cool.
PTSD. Like I did a series not so long ago after the Congress of Mexico one. I did a series about Jack Johnson, you know, the first
guy to
win the championship. That one is safe enough.
Yeah, and the Theodore Roosevelt one is pretty good as well. I love that. So where I was going with that is, you know, if I ever met Dan Carlin, I would ask him the same question as I'm about to ask you. And, you know, I met your little girl, and she's a lovely little girl. I don't know if she was planned or not, but if she was planned, and I know Dan Carlin's got a daughter, if I'm not mistaken, as well. You know, like at the root of it all is knowing what you guys know about the history of the world, and we all know that history tends to repeat itself in cycles, and that knowing what you know about human nature, and we all know that human nature doesn't really change. Did that factor into bringing a child into this world? Because for me, I don't have children, and one of the reasons I don't is having listened to shows like yours and Dan's, I just don't know if in good conscience I could bring another life into this realm, knowing that there was a possibility that they would have to live through something like a world war or a massacre or something like that. Even though that is a very remote possibility, it still could happen.
And even without going that far, just the basic existential condition of life are rough. You know, everybody's going to hurt. There's just no argument about it. Everybody's going to run into suffering time and time again. There's no argument that that's true. And so I do get what you're saying completely. On the other hand, there's the other aspect, which is there's also a lot of incredible beauty in the world. There's a lot of kindness. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of... Both things are there. they are both on the menu. You know, when you choose to leave, when you choose to be a, in that case, nobody chooses to leave per se, but when you choose to give life to somebody, you know that all of those things are going to be on the menu. There's going to be some amazing, wonderful stuff and some horrible, terrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course you want to have as much of the first as possible and as little of the latter.
Yeah.
The result is that there's only so much you control. So you need to, in order to feel okay with it, you need to feel that all the good stuff is worth all the bad stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it was Terence McKenna. There's a fantastic quote of his. If you just give me a second, that I'm going to try to look it up because it's quite a complex quote and I know I'll absolutely butcher it. Here we go. This is, you know, someone, if I were to encapsulate my philosophy into a couple of sentences, the only way I can do it is, or the best way I could do it is using this specific quote, which is, what kind of circumstances are we caught in and what kind of structures, if any, can we put in place to assuage the pain and accentuate the glory and the wonder that lurks waiting for us in this very narrow slice of time between the birth canal and the yawning grave? That to me is what I'm all about. What can we do to make it better and minimize the bad things? And I guess that leads into another question, which is that I try to ask everyone I believe is actualized. And that is, what have you found that accentuates the glory and assuages the pain in your life? What have you found that helps you with those things?
I think a lot of it, you know, when you hear meditation teachers, or by now it's pretty much popular wisdom, the whole idea of trying to live as much as possible in the moment. Because the fact is, if you dwell in the past, you're stuck, and the future, there's all sorts of anxieties about the future, and ultimately everybody's future will include getting sick, getting old, and dying, so those things that are anxiety-inducing. So the emphasis on the here and now, yes, I may not be able to control the way life is going to turn, but I do have some control on this 1 second right here in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can try to create some beauty now. No, there are no guarantees that a month from now, a week from now, 10 years from now, I will be able to make a, you know, sooner or later, something bad will happen. There's no argument. But the here and now, I can still enjoy. In this moment, I can find something to be happy about.
Mm, that's cool.
You go the long way.
In this moment, unless you're in the Cheyenne village and about to be raped and massacred, I guess that's when that breaks down a little bit. You know, I remember doing an ayahuasca session many years ago, and at the end of the session, we were all talking about what we'd learned, and one of the guys was saying he had been stuck on this, like, be here now and be in the present moment. And What ayahuasca was showing him is that one of the abilities of your mind, one of the positive abilities, is it allows you to get out of the present moment if the present moment is fucking terrible.
Absolutely. Yeah. There as well, you know, sometimes the present moment is not fun.
Yeah, yeah. But
what time when you want to go somewhere else?
Uh-huh. I do, however, understand your point. I think you make a very good point. You know, something else I wanted to speak to you about, we had a very brief conversation a week ago, or less than a week ago, I think it was Sunday, and I was discussing with you Osho and this new series that's come out called Wild Wild Country, and have you gotten to watch it yet?
No, I mean, I will. It's definitely on my to-do list, but I haven't had a chance yet.
Uh-huh. I got to be honest, man. My opinion has shifted between the time we had that conversation and now. My perspective has definitely changed. You know, I was so heavily influenced by that guy, and I think he is... I know you're a fan as well. Or I say as well because if I'm honest, I don't know how much of a fan I am now. And the reason is after watching that show, I was still defending the guy, even after seeing all the fucking terrible things that he did, or that his his commune did, because I was like, look, he's brought so much wisdom into the world, we have to forgive that. But I went and did some researching about him online, and I read a few very informative and very comprehensive articles by people who were close to him during his life. And man, I don't, he did some really shady stuff, and he was a dishonest person, and not just intellectually dishonest, but he would lie to people about relationships, and he treated several people really, really badly. And I kind of, my opinion of him has really dropped since we spoke last week, man. I'd love to know a little bit of your thoughts on Osho.
Well, it's always, to me, has always been one of those things where if somebody tells me, oh, Osho is a genius, he's amazing, I'm like, yeah, but he's also, you know,
yeah,
there are also all these really nasty things about him and his life.
Uh-huh.
If somebody say, oh, this guy just suck, I'm like, yeah, sure, but there's also like few guys have put into words some concepts in such a great way as he did. I don't know where that leaves me, because, you know, I mean, clearly as a human being, if you have such a mixed record, it is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the good stuff to me doesn't make up for the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel that I'm not a fan in that sense. You know, I do think that probably he was not the nicest person in the world, mm-hmm. and he certainly played his cards horribly in many occasions. So
that's what you said, something that's similar to what I said to my wife after we watched it, or after, specifically after I read this article, which is that, man, with that many talents, because he was a gifted man, there's no doubt about it. He had the gift of amazing oratory, and he was a very well-versed philosopher, and he had charisma. He was a very gifted man. And when you have gifts like that, it's my belief that if you live anything less than an exemplary life, that then you failed, you know?
I completely agree. That's why I find him kind of makes me mad, because I'm like, if your ideas can be that good, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a detriment to everything you've been saying when you don't live up to that in your own day-to-day life.
Exactly.
Piss me off, you know, I feel, which is kind of, so to me, it's like, I still like a lot of the philosophy. I think the philosophy is dead on a lot of things. Uh-huh. I really don't like the practice. So, I mean, if I'm to judge the human being, yeah, I'm not impressed. If I'm to judge the intellectual contribution, I am. But of course, it's a tricky thing to separate somebody's intellectual contribution from their actual self.
Yeah, there is. Although I'm starting to feel that it isn't even that tricky, and that I'm kind of, there's a standard I'm starting to adopt, which is I want to see the life the guy lived before I even start to entertain his ideas, and this is closely tied into something else that I'd love your opinion on, Daniele. You know, there's this theme in philosophy and in pop philosophy and pop psychology that you're not supposed to make a blanket statement or judgment on anyone as being all good or all bad. And, you know, I don't know if that's true. I don't know, because sure, there are cases of people who have lived or have done great things and also done terrible things, and people who have lived predominantly bad lives and also done some good things. And then it calls into question, can anyone be definitively labeled right or wrong or good or bad? And then, you know, that's, I don't know if that's true, because I do know people who are genuinely good people, and I know they wouldn't do generally bad things. They might have made a couple of minor mistakes in life, or lost their temper every now and then, or maybe once done something negative, but on the whole, on balance, they are at least 95% good. Whereas there are also people in life who are clearly pretty fucked up and negative people, like Joseph Stalin. For you to tell me, for anyone to tell me Joseph Stalin is like, you know, like everyone else, he's like, he's got good and bad aspects to him. It's like, no fucking way. This dude's just got fucking bad aspects. He's a bad fucking apple. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree with you. I think people take a little too literally the all good or bad, like it's 110% perfect or it's 110% evil. And yes, of course, nobody is a character. You know, the most horrible guy in the world sometimes say please and thank you, and the most amazing person in the world can have their day off where they yell at somebody and then they're like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. But that's not, it's exactly what you said. You know, if you are like 95 and 5 in your behavior, you're a good person. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, if you are 5 and 95, you are bad.
100%. Yeah.
5% is not like, oh, but look, there's some good. It's like, yeah, but the good is like a dot and it's just a mountain. So no, it's not all the same. They are not just different shades of gray. There are shades of gray that are so incredibly different that they are qualitatively different things. We're not the same stuff.
Very good point. So Daniele, I mean, this is probably a question I should have given you a chance to prepare for, but you know, I often believe that the first thing that pops up into the conscious mind is usually the most honest thing. So I'm going to ask you, without the ability to prepare, if you're someone who is, you're an expert on history and you've studied not only a great many world events, but also a great many world leaders and icons. Knowing what you know, if you could sit down and have a conversation with any one of these people that you've studied, who would it be? I mean, what's the first name that comes to your mind?
The guy that, I mean, there are many people I'm fascinated with as far as what they have done, their lives and everything. But one guy that I find beyond fascinating is this one Zen guy from the 1400s named Ikkyu Sojun. And the reason why I like him so much is because he, in some way, he has that kind of Osho philosophy to some degree. You know, he's absolutely brilliant, and yet, unlike so many stories where like, oh, this guy looks great, and then you start digging deeper, it sounds pretty awful, or he has done bad things, or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Ikki is one of those guys whose life, nobody ever said, oh, the guy did this and that in private that didn't match his philosophy. Mm-hmm. He, you know, what you saw is what you got with him. And what you saw was awesome. So the fact that he was one of those human beings whose practice seemed to match his philosophy, and this philosophy to me is extremely fascinating, makes me dig the guy already. And that's to great. Give you a couple of elements, you know, he was the legitimate son of the Emperor of Japan. So his mom put him in a Zen monastery when he was 5 years old because she was afraid that, you know, palace conspiracy to get rid of possible heirs would take his life. So there she was like, he's a Zen monk. He wants nothing to do with the, you know, please don't kill him. So he grew up in a fairly severe environment. And yet he was an absolute genius when it came to Zen. His grasp of Zen was so beyond most of his contemporaries. And that's why, precisely because he loved Zen, he hated what Zen had become. He felt the monasteries were running by bureaucrats, where, you know, they were parroting what Zen is without a real understanding. So like when he was, there's this tradition in Zen Buddhism that your teacher is supposed to give you, as ridiculous as that sounds, a certificate of enlightenment.
Okay.
And then so you can go on teaching, right?
Uh-huh.
And when they gave it to Ikki, he's like, seriously? Certificate of enlightenment?
Great.
So he burned it. But you know, burning that is like the equivalent of, you know, burning your PhD. You can't teach without it. You can't do your stuff. And it's like, yeah, come on, man. Let's tell about this, you know. And at one point they make him head of this one monastery, hoping that some responsibilities will kind of mellow him down. And within 10 days, nobody can find him. And at this point, he left behind saying, I'm sorry, guys, but, you know, 10 days in this monastery, I'm losing my mind already. If anybody's looking for me, I'm either at the sake shop or the local brothel.
Amazing.
And he's very blunt about it. Like, his thing is, his main passions are Zen, drinking, and women. The way he, you know, whereas people who do those things on the hush-hush, being, you know, no, we believe these things, and they do something else. Ikki was very much, you know, as long as you don't hurt anybody, then there is no sacred and profane. There is a life lived with full awareness, which again, as long as, big caveat, as long as you don't hurt anyone, then you can have, you know, some wild night of sex is not any less meaningful than meditating in the mountains.
Wow. So it's the goal. It's basically the golden rule. I mean, do unto others. No, that's interesting. So what comes to mind when you were describing him, and he sounds like just my kind of person. He actually sounds a little bit like you, Daniele. That's who you're modeling yourself on now, huh?
Exactly.
Oh, okay, I get it. You know, I never cease to be amazed by man's ability to take people or the wisdom that they bring into the world, enlightened individuals, or the wisdom that they bring forth onto this plane, and package it and put rules around it and bind it and subsequently destroy it. We saw it happen with Jesus. We saw it happen with Buddha. The example I think of is how Buddha on his deathbed specifically told his disciples not to make statues of him. And he's now the most idolized figure in the history of the world. There's more Buddha statues than any other, you know, or how Jesus, if you think about the teachings of Jesus and the way he lived his life, you know, that is pretty much as far from the way 99% of people in churches live their lives. It just blows my mind. Like, it's almost like the truth cannot survive very long in the world before it becomes corrupted and desecrated. Does that make sense?
Totally. I think there's a guy that, have you ever read this writer called Tom Robbins? Not to be confused with Anthony Robbins, different guy. Tom is a novelist. He wrote some novels. Some of the most famous ones were called Even Cowgirls Get the Blues.
I've heard of that book, but I have not read it.
I think you'll dig him. Okay. Because it's the second time in the conversation that something you say brings up in my mind, oh, that's exactly what Tom Robbins talked about.
Okay.
I think you would... And actually, while earlier you were telling me, while we were talking about sort of the existential dilemma of life, and I dug up a Tom Robbins quote that I can read for you that gives you a bit of the vibe of the guy. He says, my view of the world is not that different from Kafka, really. The difference is that Kafka let him miserable, and I refuse. Life is too short. My personal motto has always been joy in spite of everything. Not just mindless joy, but joy in spite of everything, recognizing that the inequities and suffering and corruption and all that, but refusing to let it rain on my parade.
Wow. Wow, that is absolutely magic. I was in Florida recently and I was chatting to a very smart kid, and he was a philosophy student. He was telling me about these two Russian, I think they were either Russian or French philosophers who are used as like compare and contrast studies. Like, I think it was Hobbes and Paine or something like that. If I'm anyway, I don't know enough about the subject to remember correctly who they were, but the one guy's view was that life is short and harsh or something like that.
Kind of like Hobbes?
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, Hobbes. And then who was his counterpart who believed the opposite, which was like
life probably is... Rousseau.
Oh, that's it. It's Hobbes and Rousseau. That's it. It was Hobbes and Rousseau. So Hobbes believed life was short and harsh, and Rousseau believed life was, to my understanding, he believed life was what you made it to be, or something similar to that. And when he told me about this, the first question I asked was, well, tell me a little bit about Hobbes's life. And he said, yeah, he died young and he was pretty miserable. And, you know, that was his lot. And then I said, okay, what about Rousseau? And he said, yeah, Rousseau was a pretty happy family man and he had a pretty successful and good life. And it just made me think that perhaps the mind, this thing that we have running in our skulls, is so fucking powerful that it is whatever you think it's going to be on a subconscious or a conscious level. And if a guy like Robbins, you know, he chose to believe that he could find the joy and live a joyful life, and that's what he was going to live, right?
Yep. Which, again, it doesn't mean you practice, because a lot of the people who have sort of the positive thinking gig, sometimes to me they are desperately trying not to face reality. You know, like everything is always for the best. I'm like, I'm sorry, but no, sometimes things are not for
sometimes
the best.
It just plain fucking sucks, dude.
Exactly. And now once we acknowledge that it sucks, then yes, let's figure out how to turn a horrible situation into something better. I'm all for that. You know, let's not sit here and weep ourselves forever regarding how evil the universe is. But let's be real, you know, first let's say, okay, it sucks, this is terrible. Then let's take the next step and figure out how we can make the best of a horrible situation, you know? I think that you are, sometimes people tend to skip the first step, and then, you know, the whole idea of positive thinking becomes just bullshit.
Yeah.
Whereas, precisely because I believe in positive thinking, I think it's important to be real too, and not just this, let's just sugarcoat everything and pretend that harshness is not harsh and that everything is great. No, it's not.
Yeah.
But once we have established that, what can I do today to make the present condition? Okay, I got really bad cards. I'm going to play them.
Yeah.
You know,
to
complain about the bad cards the whole day, or I'm going to figure out how to play them in the best possible way.
So true. It's kind of like, you know, I'm reminded of the story of the Buddha, like when he, I don't know it exceptionally well, but it's my understanding that up until early adulthood, he was kept cloistered in this palace by his father, who didn't want to expose him to any of the horrors and the miseries of the world. So he wasn't even allowed to see old people or cripples, or every single one of his needs was taken care of. And then eventually he felt the need to go see the outside world, and he escaped, and he saw all these terrible things for the first time. And that's what led him to enlightenment. And to me, I believe that you, as you said, it's, if you want to be those people who sticks your head in the sand, I don't think that the enlightenment that you can find is as good as the enlightenment you can find once you realize just how much suffering and how much horror and misery is in the world. And once you've tasted a little bit of it yourself, and that the enlightenment that you will get after that is a much sweeter, richer, higher quality enlightenment or joy, which I guess people could argue that they're both the same thing.
Yeah, because ultimately the first one is delusional. And the first time that, you know, no matter how hard you are trying to deny reality, the first time that life smacks you in the face in a big way and forces you to look at it, the whole big castle may collapse.
Yeah.
The whole structure you built on, oh, it's all for the best, it's all great, is not going to survive when you're smacked really hard.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, you have been smacked really hard and you do figure out a way to be happy in spite of understanding that life is tough. Well, then the odds that that state of being, that emotion is going to be able to survive everything that life throws at you, the odds have improved a lot.
Very true. Geez, Daniele, I mean, we're approaching 30 minutes, which is usually the length of the podcast, and we haven't mentioned jiu-jitsu once. I'm sure there's going to be a mass outcry and people are going to be lynching me because it's the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. So I guess I should ask you a little bit about your martial arts training. What's happening with your martial arts training at the moment?
Well, the thing that I realized long time ago is that the way my life was structured, I was never going to be able in a position to have my 5 days a week of training, twice a day kind of thing. Well, a choice that I had to make early on was, am I going to train or am I not going to train? Because, you know, there's a big difference between training 0 times a week and training twice a week. And if twice a week is all I can do, is that still worth it? Because clearly you're not going to get as good, or you're not going to get as good as fast as other people. So my thing was always, okay, I know that I'm never going to be in a position to train the way I would love to train. But does that mean I shouldn't train then? No, I still feel that a little is better than nothing. And so that's kind of what my thing is. I mean, there have been times in my life when I was able to train more. Definitely the last few years of my life, and in that case, having kids does not help, make it harder to get the time. But I'm always trying to make that little bit that, you know, to me, even if I get in on the mat twice a week, that's like a ritual that it helps me stay sane. Like there was a period where I really wasn't training for a little bit, and those were miserable years of my life. Maybe for a couple of years, I would get to train once every 3 weeks kind of thing, just to remember what it's like. I'm not really training. The difference between that and when I got back to a regularity, no matter how little that was, is huge. Just for mental health, for my mood, for everything, just get on the mat those couple of times a week. Feels so, like, I think better, I'm nicer to people. And so primarily the last few years has been, I kind of gave up on striking. You know, I train striking a bunch. I don't feel like getting punched in the head anymore. So I'm primarily just been judo and jiu-jitsu. And I find judo really damn hard. It's like the learning curve in judo is so much harder than in jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu I'm more comfortable with. You know, I realize that the time I spend in jiu-jitsu, I consistently see progress. The time I spend in judo is very, you know, the plateaus are long and endless, and then once in a while I feel like I'm adding something to my game. But that's kind of what I've been playing with. Primarily heavy grappling game these days, not much in other directions.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really do appreciate the way, you know, you've said it's better to have, like, you might not be swimming in the pool, but it's still good to have like a toe dipped in the water, you know. And I think, yeah, twice a week, actually, I always tell people twice a week is okay. Once a week is a waste of time. Like, nothing, there's no progress. It's you're treading water. But three times a week is much better, but still twice a week is good enough. And if you can just keep your foot in that pool, you know, then there might become a set of circumstances in your life, like maybe you'll retire, or maybe you'll get a job that has your far more time, or maybe you'll move closer to the gym, and then it'll be easier to increase your amount. Whereas if you weren't training at all, then to start again, that is always tough as hell.
Yeah, this week my daughter is with her grandma in the mountains, so I have a whole week essentially to myself. So I'm putting in five times this week because I'm like, yes, this is a week where I can actually train in a way that I would like to. Uh-huh. And I think one cool thing about that is that it forces me to think about jiu-jitsu differently, because clearly in terms of athleticism or sheer muscle memory, I'm not going to be able to compete with some guy who's putting in 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What
is a monstrous emphasis on strategy. A monstrous emphasis on playing the game in a way that allows me to move the role to my points of strength, and to, you know, if he's better than me on 90% of the game, okay, well, that means there's a 10% where maybe he's not. And if I can figure out to strategize the game to go on the 10%, doesn't even matter that he's better than me in every other aspect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very smart. And,
I play, the thing that I do a lot is I play a very strategic game. I always try to, because again, if purely in terms of athleticism and muscle memory, there's just no, you know, math doesn't lie. If you put in those hours, there's no way you can compete with putting in three times those many hours. Mm-hmm.
So true. So true. Daniele, my brother, what a interesting and stimulating conversation. I really, really do appreciate connecting with minds such as yours. It always it brings a smile to my face, and I really would like to do this again in the
Absolutely.
Future.
We can start with jiu-jitsu so people don't send you hate mail.
You joke, bro, but there's going to be a backlash. I'm going to be in LA next month, and I'd love to see you. Maybe we can do another one, and maybe like even do a video one. I've been toying with the idea of doing video podcasts. So in the meanwhile, if people want to find out more about you and the pretty awesome stuff you put out into the world, where should they go?
So as far as, you know, let's give something for the good people who are in for the martial arts. So some of the stuff that I've done that's more martial art related that may be interesting to people. The first book I wrote way back in 2003 was about philosophy and martial arts. Called On the Warrior's Path. So that one is one that has gone, I mean, in martial arts circles have become fairly big. People seem to have dug it a lot. And then I wrote a couple of other books, and then my latest book called Not Afraid is also fairly heavy. I mean, it's not just about martial arts, but there's at least half of it is. And it's more about the way in which martial art training has helped me in facing some of the harshest possible situations in daily life. There's a bit more of an autobiographical element to it, and it really is at the juncture between what I learned on the mat, how it translated to life outside of the mat. For people who are more martial arts specific, these are a couple of things that you may dig. And also, of course, the podcast, History on Fire. I mean, most episodes are not, you know, there are a couple of things. Like, there's a lot of combat sports when discussing Theodore Roosevelt. There's, of course, a lot when discussing Jack Johnson, was the first black heavyweight champion in boxing.
You know, Daniela, if you don't mind me interrupting you, I wanted to ask, and forgive me if you've already done this, because I haven't checked the show in a few months, but do you have plans to do something surrounding the history of Japan?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually, one of the things that's coming up, I'll be doing one on the 47 Ronin.
Oh, damn. Really?
Sorry. Yeah, so I'll do that one. At one point, probably the single most requested topic that I get is Miyamoto Musashi.
No way. I'm literally the first in line to listen to that one.
Definitely do that one at some point. And I want to do also the guy we're talking about, Ikkyu, the Zen guy. That would be a fun one. That's not always about bloodshed and fighting. There's something different there. So, yeah, Japan is super interesting.
Oh man, have you been there before?
Never been to Asia at all.
We're gonna go together sometime. We're gonna make it happen.
I'm looking forward because my girlfriend Savannah M is gonna be fighting in Asia soon, so I'm looking forward to taking trips all over Asia. That's gonna be cool.
That's something I should have mentioned as well, is that Savannah is a pretty good up and coming female MMA fighter. I think she's got a lot of potential and. She's pretty exciting to watch as well. So if you, please remind me of her surname, Daniele.
It's the weirdest Cambodian. It's like E-M-M.
Okay.
There's the letter E and the letter M.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun to watch. So if you guys get an opportunity to see Savannah M fight either on video or live, you should definitely take that opportunity with both hands. Daniele, my brother, until the next time we speak, thank you so much for your time and 1,000 blessings on you and Iz and Savannah.
Thank you so much, Nick.
I'm guessing that is not what you guys had in mind when you tuned into a jiu-jitsu podcast. But either way, I'm sure you enjoyed it. And I really do believe that these kinds of topics are things that all seeking martial artists should be investigating or at least entertaining. You know, when I spent time around Daniele, I was just in LA and I stayed with him at his home recently. He really is a very gentle, calm person. And he definitely feels self-actualized when you're around him. You can sense he has a really good presence. And I think that that's what we're all striving for ultimately as martial artists. I know that that's what I'm always striving for. And so Daniele is definitely onto something. So it's cool that he comes and shares his ideas with us. Thanks again, Daniele. Cool, guys. That's it for this week on the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'll catch you guys next week. Until then, peace out.